Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk mainly about the Marshall Plan, the plan by Secretary of State George Marshall to reflate, to rebuild the European economy after the Second World War, in the sure and certain knowledge that unless rapid action was taken, that Europe would fall to some kind of extremism in a short space of time. Previously, we looked at the Truman Doctrine. The Truman Doctrine was Harry Truman's relatively late in the game pronouncement on America's Cold War intentions and America's decision to be proactive in facing down the expansion of communism, either through invasion from a foreign power, as in the case of the Korean War, or in the case of some sort of internal subversion, such as during the Greek Civil War. It was Greece, and the threat of a communist takeover there, and the withdrawal of Britain, who had been supporting the royalist side in the Greek Civil War since the end of the Second World War, that prompted Truman to act. But the Marshall Plan was a much more significant in many ways initiative and had more far-reaching consequences. It was partly informed by humanitarian thinking, but it was mainly a way of projecting America's economic power and translating that into what one would call soft power now, presenting Western Europe with American-led liberal democratic capitalism as a model and a framework for societies who are emerging either from occupation or from having been the occupying fascist power in question, in the case of Germany and Italy. Marshall was keen that America did not have to fight a third war in Europe, and he viewed the prospects of another conflict in Europe as extremely high if the problems of Europe's economic and political stability were not solved. They had not been solved as a result of the Paris Peace Conference in 1919, and Marshall was acutely aware of this lesson. So today we're looking at Grand Expectations, which we've dipped into many times before, James Patterson's History of America, 1945-74. And he writes, "Humanitarian concerns indeed formed part of the motivation behind the Marshall Plan. The winter of 1946-47 had been the worst in memory for Western Europeans. Blizzards and cold in Great Britain, France and Germany had brought commerce and transportation virtually to a standstill, creating frightening shortages of winter wheat, coal and electricity. The gears of Big Ben froze. England at one point was but a week away from running out of coal. People were cold, hungry and desperate. In May 1947, Churchill described Europe as a rubble heap, a charnel house, a breeding ground of pestilence and hate. Now, if you've had the chance, I know I've recommended it before, to read either Keith Lowe's brilliant book, Savage Continent, or the greatest of all European 20th century histories, post-war by Tony Judd. The first thing that emerges is that after 1945, Europe was not at peace. There were conflicts across Europe, the Balkans, Greece, Poland, Italy, the Baltic states, and other parts of Eastern and Central Europe were still ablaze with ethnic violence. Mass expulsions of ethnic minorities and ethnic cleansing continued. The remaining Jews in Europe came under renewed threat in the countries where they had been, for want of a better word, liberated, often from local populations, which precipitated another mass exodus of Jews to the British Mandate of Palestine. So here we have an incredibly violent continent that by no means has found what one would call peace simply because of the defeat of Nazi Germany. It was this, among other factors, that led Marshall to believe that something urgent must be done. The Marshall Plan was about more than simply the relief of destitution. And there had already been initiatives to relieve the suffering of post-war Europe. The World Bank established through the Bretton Woods Conference of 1944, and the UNRRA, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, had seen American money channeled into Europe in order to deal with humanitarian crises. Marshall was thinking that something bigger than simply a relief operation was necessary. The rebirth, really, of European economies and European civil society was necessary, and there was a short lifespan on this before extremist views, either of fascistic or communist views, came to the fore. Indeed, there were large communist parties in France, in Italy and other European countries, and Marshall nervously to these organisations, assuming that Stalin might not even need to march into the West. He might have governments that emerged there sympathetic to him, quite without his direct influence. Marshall basically believed that it was necessary to rebuild the economies of Europe. And in the long run, this would also promote the economic integration of Western Europe and the political integration of Western Europe. The EU, as we understand it, one of its founding fathers is George Marshall. And this is perhaps not what Marshall fully intended, but certainly Marshall Aid was one of the moments that saw this transition towards a more integrated Europe. So where there were supporters of the plan at the time who were very frank that the money that was proposed, the vast sums that were proposed, would not simply vanish or go down a rabbit hole. Instead, the investment in Europe, the rebuilding of Europe, would create markets for American businesses for decades to come. The Marshall Plan, in a way, was a great process of dollar recycling. When you have a country that has an economic surplus, it is a creditor nation, so it has flows of money to it from the rest of the world because it's owed debts. Those dollars can't simply sit in a bank and do nothing. They need to keep moving. And the easiest way to do this is to lend them out again or to give grants in a way. in order for people with dollars to buy American goods and services. So in doing so, American economic development would be served also by the Marshall Plan. Truman was thinking more in strategic terms. Truman worried that Europeans might turn towards communism. Not only had Stalin managed to establish his puppet regimes across Eastern Europe, it would be in 1948 that the final communist government would establish itself in Czechoslovakia. But there were also, as I mentioned before, significant communist parties in France and Italy and several other Western European countries. Some members of Congress looked with no small amount of suspicion at the British Labour Party and its plans for nationalisation and the development of a welfare state. And it would be Britain, in fact, that would be the largest recipient of Marshall Aid. And Marshall Aid, at least in Great Britain, seemed to have had the desired political effect. This is an extract from Austerity Britain by David Kynaston. He writes, "There was much on the Labour Party's mind by 1947 to 48, as, following the great burst of legislation since 1945, it sought to orientate itself for the 1950s. Would it, for instance, tamely line up behind Ernest Bevin's strong pro-American anti-communist line? If you're interested in listening to a podcast on Ernest Bevin, I did one last week, I think, so yes, check that out. Over Easter 1947, shortly after President Harry Truman had proclaimed his fiercely anti-Soviet doctrine, denouncing communism for its inherent expansionism and promising on the part of the free world an enduring struggle against it, three young Labour MPs, Richard Crossman, Michael Foote and Ian Mercado, wrote an almost instantly published pamphlet, Keep Left. Critical of Bevin's dangerous dependence on the US, it demanded that British and French socialists form an alliance sufficiently strong to hold the balance of world power, to halt the division into a Western and Eastern bloc, and so to make the United Nations a reality. Within weeks there appeared to be a counter-pamphlet, Cards on the Table, written by Dennis Healy, on Bevin's behalf, and poured the coldest of cold water on the notion that Britain had anywhere else but the US to turn if it was serious about wanting to moderate Russia's aggressive anti-British policy. Over the following 9 months, two crucial developments persuaded Crossman, Foote and Mercado to turn right. The first was the American initiative, first flagged in June 1947, that in due course became Marshall Aid, large-scale economic assistance to enable Europe's, including Britain's, post-war reconstruction, welcome almost as much on the Labour left as on its right. The other, in February 1948, was the communist coup in Czechoslovakia, which was extraordinarily hard to reconcile, with a benign reading of Soviet foreign policy. So in this context, what David Kynaston is showing us is that Marshall Aid actually was offered to Europe at just the right time. As there were members of socialist parties, democratic socialist parties across Europe, who were in no way communist or likely to initiate communist policies, who were still thinking that it would be possible to navigate a middle course in world affairs and in European affairs.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Neither Soviet nor American. This is precisely the kind of naive thinking that Stalin was hoping for. It was precisely that sort of misunderstanding about the emerging Cold War and misunderstanding about Britain or France or West Germany's world role and position that encouraged centre-left figures such as Crossman, Foote and Mikado to consider the possibility that they could chart a third way in Europe and independent of either Cold War actors. In this case, it was impossible. And also the use of soft power, the use of financial assistance and support to revitalize economies and to lead by example meant that there was a compelling reason to fall within the American sphere of influence. Britain was obviously less of a concern to the Americans than France. France already had Communist Party members in the cabinet, particularly in the Ministry of Defence. The Communist Party had played quite a significant role in the liberation of France, and so it had there was a long legacy there of Communist involvement. In Italy seemed to be even more likely to fall to communism. And in this light, martial aid and the Truman Doctrine worked together, kind of two complementary policies. The aid was given directly from America. It didn't come through any international agency. And so its political intent was abundantly clear. And that meant that it could be directed in ways which were complementary to American political interests. And it would mean that hopefully the threat of communism would be held off in Western Europe. Communism tended to emerge in tandem with hunger. And food, indeed, in every communist regime established since 1917, had been a key weapon, a key tool of controlling populations and allowing them or encouraging them to accept the party as was imposed upon them. And it would hopefully in the future, Marshall hoped, create a integrated trading bloc in Europe, which would be, Marshall predicted, which would have a resurgent Germany at its head. Aid did not come without conditions. Marshall made it clear, writes James Patterson, that the United States required joint proposals of needs from from European countries as part of the European Recovery Plan, as it was called. At first, the Soviets seemed ready to take part, and Foreign Minister Molotov and aides appeared at a conference in Paris to make known their desires. At the last moment, however, Molotov received a telegram from home and marched his delegation out. Although it is not wholly clear why Stalin refused to take part, two concerns may have moved him. Firstly, he knew that the Soviet Union would not get very much in the way of needed short-term credits through the ERP. Second, the Soviets would have been required to share information about their resources and to relinquish some of their control over economic management. Skeptics who doubt the humanitarian rationale behind the Marshall Plan think that the American planners deliberately include these requirements with the expectation that the troublesome East Bloc would stay out of the planning. Perhaps, perhaps not. It's still hard to say. But the offer had been made and could hardly have been withdrawn if the Soviets had accepted it. Their refusal made the ERP a much more attractive proposition to the American people and Congress. In this sense, Stalin was short-sighted to reject it. Short-sighted in some ways, but if you look at things from a Stalinist perspective, what Stalin perhaps was aware of was that the European Recovery Programme, Marshall Aid, and the preconditions upon it would see the Soviet economy and the world economy, or integrated into the world economy. The Soviet Union would become part of the process of post-war globalisation. Had this happened, then the ability of the Soviet Union to manage its own economy, to adjust its own economy in the interests of Soviet social and economic priorities would have been diminished, perhaps even completely lost. One only needs to look at what happened to the countries of Eastern Europe during the 1970s as they took on Western debt and the quick crumbling of their economies in the 1980s as a result. Countries that take on foreign loans or foreign grants of aid become opened up to the creditor nation and to the world economy in general. The money on offer in August 1947 was $29 billion, and this would be spread over 4 years. Western European countries eagerly accepted it. It was an enormous sum that was eventually reduced through Congress, congressional objections, down to $17.8 billion. Even this was an enormous sum of money, and the Republicans, who were budget conscious, and many of the Democrats, who were looking to cut federal spending and taxes, swooned at the overall cost. The economic rationale, many perhaps didn't quite appreciate, nor the kind of geopolitical and strategic rationale. And their simple view, and that of their lecturers, is why must we now fund Europeans after having saved them? Henry Wallace was largely ambivalent, not one of the critics. He had previously thought that military aid in the guise of the Truman Doctrine was a terrible thing, but here he was far more likely, as the chief equivocating liberal of the day, he was far more likely to look upon this as relatively benign. There were conservative members of the Republican Party who saw the Marshall Plan as simply an extension of Roosevelt's New Deal, which they passionately hated, a New Deal for Europe. Wallace became less enthusiastic about the plan when he began to see it as an extension of Cold War politics, seeing as it as a way of marginalising Russia, perhaps not realising that Russia in this case had chosen to marginalise itself. Critics of the plan debated it in Congress throughout the winter of 1947-48, and there were those who doubted that aid was necessary, or that aid could actually make the kind of differences that Marshall claimed it would do. However, when their delegations of congressmen visited Europe, And returned with fairly grim stories of widespread suffering and, in certain parts of Europe, starvation. There was a consensus began to emerge within Congress that what was being proposed was indeed necessary. And those that had been to Europe looked nervously eastwards, such as the Republican congressman from Illinois, Everett Dirksen, who said that a red tide could be was prevalent in Europe, and that it was like some vile creeping thing which is spreading its web westwards. Stalin, who believed that this was another moment in the encirclement of the Soviet Union, was quick to speed up the timetable for a coup in Czechoslovakia, wanting to make sure that this key strategic Central European country could not participate in the developing of a new Western economic bloc. Now, it's certainly true that American export industries did very well out of the Marshall Plan. The Marshall Plan, being in dollars, made sure that European countries were largely obliged to buy American goods for their the reconstruction of their economies. But it's also possible to overlook the fact that Europeans did much to improve their own circumstances. It wasn't simply American largesse. The plan gave them a great deal of autonomy and initiative in order to work out how the money was spent and in what ways. And the rapid rebirth of Europe by the mid-1950s is due in part to Marshall Aid and due in part to this industrious and dedicated generation of British, French, Italian, German, Dutch and other European figures who saw this golden age of prosperity and general social harmony emerge in the 50s and 60s. In total, Europe received $13.34 billion between 1948 and 1952. It was eagerly received, and it, as mentioned, facilitated recovery. It promoted a generation of political stability in Europe, and it demonstrated that America had serious and long-term commitments to European stability, and it probably did more for America's reputation in Western Europe than perhaps even America's military contribution during the war. So there we must leave it for today. Next time we'll be looking at the last thing there is to say about Truman's foreign policy, and that is the creation of the National Security Act 1947, which saw the creation of the CIA as a result. Anyway, I hope you find this interesting, and I'll speak to you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thank you, all the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.